The International Criminal Court said today that Muammar Gaddafi's captured son Saif, considered his father's heir, can be tried in Libya. But a trial may force Libyans to confront their own complicity in the Gaddafi regime, according to our next guest, Libyan author Hisham Mater, who says Muammar Gaddafi did not drop from Mars. Hisham Mater has lived in exile for 30 years. His father is the famed Libyan dissident leader Abdallah Mater, thought to have been killed in the 90s. But then last year, his family got word that Abdallah had been seen in prison in 2002. Of course, the family has been wondering, will they find him alive? Hisham Mater was about to return to Libya for the first time in over 30 years. Hisham Mater's latest novel is Anatomy of a Disappearance. He's teaching this fall at Barnard College and joins us from a studio at Columbia University. Hisham, welcome.
Thank you.
What do you think are the chances of finding your father?
Well, obviously, since the revolution has taken charge of the country and all of the political prisons have been opened, things don't look very very good for us, because there's been no news about my father since. But obviously, in a bigger way, it's very good for the country. So many of the disappeared and missing have returned home, and those who haven't, at least now people are able to investigate what might have happened to them.
I'm sorry, you know, that it's sounding as if you would have heard from him by now, as you say. You mentioned that at least this is, you didn't use the word closure, it can be such a trite word, but at least this might help you and your family to move on, at least the fact that there's been committees set up and, you know, you might move from that place where you were for 20 years trying to, you know, figure out where he was.
Yeah, I mean, the way individuals and families deal with these things is an incredibly private. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yes, I mean, in the larger picture, it is very important for Libya to understand and address these past atrocities. I mean, history shows that without doing that, the chances of these atrocities repeating themselves remains high.
One of the things that you've said, maybe a piece of that narrative, is, you know, you feel Libyans have to recognize that Gaddafi didn't fall from Mars. You know, he was enabled in some ways, and that's got to be resolved.
And I think it's going to take us time, but not only time, but a sort of intellectual and emotional courage to look at the past and try to understand how we came here. And that's one of the things that novelists are interested in, the details of how people behave. How do people love under this reality, listen to music, cook a meal? It's exactly that private moment, that private act that the dictatorship was always very keen into intruding upon and corrupting.
But here, that intrusion's been removed in some ways, and you describe sort of it's like pulling the props out from under something. It's sort of, you know, the good news is that intrusion isn't there, that regime isn't there. The bad news is there's sort of nothing there. It's sort of a jelly kind of thing. And while that's scary, you say it's also exciting.
Well, it is, because take me, for example. I was born in 1970. So Gaddafi's revolution, or coup, really, is a more accurate description, took place in 69. So my entire life has been dominated by his reality. Every detail was determined. I knew exactly what was expected of me. I knew exactly what I'm supposed to read, what I'm not supposed to read, how I'm supposed to behave, what words I'm permitted to speak, what words I'm not permitted to speak. And what that does to a society is that it sort of dispossesses society of all of the necessary thinking that a healthy society demands of its citizens. Libyans haven't had that. We have always known what's expected from us. And now we don't know. And that comes, of course, with a sense of anxiety, naturally. But I would also argue it's one of the signs of maturity. You know, you plan and you work hard for the future, but you also have to be okay with not knowing what's going to happen. And that's a fantastic opportunity that the men and women who fought and won this revolution have granted the rest of the country.
You know, it strikes me when I'm listening to you, you're speaking about Libyans in general as well. You went to school and lived, you know, largely in exile outside of Libya. but it's still in your head. And it strikes me that, you know, in effect, you've lost two fathers. You know, one, this evil one that was imposed on you, the other one that was adored.
I wish Libya was just in my head.
Mm,
I think I would be able to get rid of it. But Libya is in my blood and in my heart. You know, I battle with it. I love it. And at the same time, I begrudge it all the pain and interference.
Well, let me just ask you then, because when you were speaking, I didn't want to impose something on you that maybe you weren't saying. So even living outside of Libya, you were feeling Gaddafi's edicts about what you should say and what you should think, even though you weren't there.
Well, yes. I mean, Gaddafi, you know, hunted dissidents abroad. When I started mm-hmm. speaking out, when my first book, In the Country of Men, which is a story that is set against the backdrop of Gaddafi's Libya, came out in 2006, and the book was banned in Libya, suddenly, you know, my everyday life changed. You know, I wasn't able to visit my family who lived in Egypt because I was under threat there. I was watched in London, threats towards me. You know, that sort of stuff really gets into your psyche. It affects your well-being, your sense of peace. It plays havoc with you. And so imagine that on a national level, you know, where everybody inside and outside was fearful. I mean, I knew people once I started speaking out that would come to London and avoid me because they were frightened of being associated with me. I remember the moment that Tripoli fell, the sort of sense of lightness that I felt. It was almost physical. I felt that I was, you know, not under surveillance anymore. There are very clear ways how you could measure the psychological and practical material effects of dictatorship. But one thing that is very difficult to measure is that sort of low-level but constant anxiety under which a whole country lived. I would argue even people who worked with him. That's what I mean by how history can sometimes, and the way we speak about these events, abstracts them as much as illuminates them. And where novels come in is where they try to talk about these silent effects.
Hmm. So Hisham Matar, here you are going back. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go? What's your plan?
I don't really have one. I mean, beyond, you know, going back to the place that I left when I was 8 years old. You know, I miss the land itself. And I feel that, you know, besides going to see people and objects, I'm seeing the land too. And so that's sort of my plan. What will happen, how long I will be there, you know, I don't know about that. I'll have to see.
But Hisham, you said you doubt you'll find your father alive. We're reminded when you were watching the Arab uprising, the Arab Spring on TV while in exile in London, you saw people holding pictures of your father. It's hard to imagine how hard it's going to be for you. You know, he's the reason you can go back. But he won't be there.
It's, you know, my father is, you know, in many ways, you know, people feel, and I hear it in your voice too, and I appreciate it. I the sympathy that you know, this extraordinary fate, and he's lost, and we don't know where he is.
Right.
But actually, one of the things that I always feel like I want to kind of interject and say. Of course, it's been incredibly difficult to live for 22 years now, not knowing where my father is, not being able to communicate with him. Of course, it's been incredibly painful to lose somebody that I was incredibly close to and who was such a central figure in my life. But also, on some level, it has been very convenient being my father's son. You know, here's a man with whom I agreed on a lot of things. He was honorable, he was brave. Sometimes I feel that the kind of sympathy that is directed toward me sometimes might be better directed towards somebody whose father sold out. You know, I think that's a much more difficult fate to live with, to live with the fate that your father committed these crimes and colluded with the regime in silencing and killing people. And feeding you blood money. You know, I don't know what that would be like. And I think this is a time, actually, for the whole country to be aware of this reality, because this is a time where we need to understand that the Gaddafi reality oppressed not only those like me, but also those whose will and pride and respect for themselves has been bent, you know. Yes, I wish my father was here to see this day. You know, he sacrificed his liberty and possibly his life in a time when very few people felt able to, and many thought people like him were irresponsible or reckless. For him to see this moment would have been fantastic. But I also know that it's because of him and people like him that we are where we are today. So my father, for me, lives in so many private things that I can't speak to you about. Mm-hmm. But he also lives in this historical moment as well. But I refuse for him to be abstracted by it. You know, I refuse for him to be a victim or a martyr or a hero or something. You know, I'm very jealous about my father that he is still that man that I knew, the way he was with his family.
Human.
That's where he exists. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, you would be forgiven for wanting revenge, but you've said you don't want revenge. You want, you know, accountability.
Revenge begets nothing. I mean, revenge, if anything, it inflames, you know, the wound more. Also, it misses something about the reality of these circumstances, in the sense that I would believe it would be arrogant of me to think that the people who did these things to my father, the people who stole him from his house, imprisoned him, and tortured him, are somehow intrinsically different from me. It's arrogant because it's not accurate. The thing is that what led them to these actions are a series of circumstances. I'm not dispossessing them of individual responsibility, not at all. And also the reason why I am the way I am is because of a series of very good circumstances and some not very good circumstances, but I had an invitation to be this or that, and I decided to be the way I am, and they decided to be the way they are. Now, revenge is just an annihilation, you know, of the other person. The true victory, I think, is where the two extremes meet. They meet in a sense of justice and accountability.
Would you like to see something like a reconciliation council?
Yes, I would, actually. I have a great deal of admiration for the South African model of truth and reconciliation. And I know that there are a lot of people in Libya who have an appetite for this and are interested in this. It is really the only way that I know of, that we could navigate this place in our history, that we don't get bogged down with the hunger for revenge and retribution.
Hisham Matar, I read something, I think it was in The Guardian. Do you still have your father's pipe in a cup with your pencils and his coat in your closet?
Yes, I do, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different writers have different rituals. My discipline is to do with when my pencils become blunt. So I start in the morning by sharpening 5 pencils, and I write or draw until the pencils are blunt, and then I stop working. And those pencils live in a jar with my father's pipe. My father was deeply encouraging of my writing attempts when I was a young boy. He had a fantastic library still. We still have the library of wonderful books on which my brother and I grew up. You know, things were read out loud, poems and even newspaper articles in such a theatrical way. It was wonderful. And it was a way that infected me with a love of language and of working with language. And so there is a connection to me between the pipe and the pencils. It's one of the ways that I remember my father.
And keep him human. That's writer Hisham Matar, his father, the Libyan dissident Jabala Matar. Hisham will be going back to Libya for the first time in some 30 years very soon. His latest novel is Anatomy of a Disappearance. Hisham, thanks so much for speaking with us, and best of luck on your journey.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.